The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Too much concentration on our smartphones is definitely damaging our health. And the reason for that is that it tends to damage our relationships. There is even a word for that. It's called fubbing. And if you haven't heard that, fubbing comes from phone and snubbing. And basically it means, you know, you've seen those people. They are sitting in a restaurant around the table, a whole family, and everybody, instead of talking, they are all looking at their phones.
Greetings, scribes. You are tuned into The Writer Files, and I am still your host, Kelton Reed, sending you positivity and prolificness, as usual, during these bizarro times. This week, the lauded science journalist and author Marta Zaraska spoke with me about the impacts of loneliness on your health, why we need to think about aging earlier, and how smartphones ruin relationships. Marta is the author of two nonfiction books, two literary novels, and she's contributed to two travel books published by National Geographic. Her latest is Growing Young, How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. And it's a smart, research-driven case for why optimism, kindness, and strong social networks will help you live to be a centenarian. Bestselling author Adam Grant said of the book, "If you care about the length and quality of your life, but can't stomach yet another diet or workout routine, this book is for you." Marta has been published in The Washington Post, Scientific American, New Scientist, The Atlantic, Discover, and her articles and books have been turned into TV programs around the globe. In this file, Marta and I discussed how she distills the essence of hundreds of research papers into highly readable prose, why social isolation is so abnormal for humans, and the double-edged sword of the pandemic, how retirement can have negative side effects, and why introverted writers really need only one good friend. A quick note on this one, it was recorded at the end of June 2020. Stay safe and stay sane out there as best you can. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. Thank you so much for taking time today to rap with us about all things writing and this fantastic latest book. How are you surviving there? I understand you're across the pond in France.
Yes, things were pretty tough the last few months. Where I live, we actually were at the very epicenter of the pandemic. So we were on the lockdown for 56 days when we were basically not allowed to leave our houses. We even had to have a special permission to step out of the front doors, basically. But things are much better now. So it's all coming back to the new normal, how they call it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to talk about the new normal. And I know there's lots to talk about related to Growing Young, this fantastic second nonfiction book of yours that recently came out. But yeah, talk a little bit about your background as a science journalist. And, you know, I understand that you've written all types of things. You know, you've written a couple novels, and of course you've contributed to some travel books. lots of different science publications and periodicals. But talk a little bit about kind of your history and your background, maybe the Cliff's Notes of how you became a science journalist, and even how you kind of define it, because I understand, you know, there are lots of different classifications of science journalism, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, so I'm a lawyer by education, which is, some people find it weird, but I actually often say that being a lawyer makes me a better science journalist, because having this education as a lawyer, you know, we are trained to look for holes in an argument. So look for things that don't add up, look for weak spots, and also try to see things from different sides, which I think is extremely important when you are doing science journalism. So in a very weird way, my legal training is helping me really a lot in my work as a science journalist. But at the same time, I've worked as a journalist since I was 16. So I worked as a journalist all the way through law school as well. And I started off as a foreign correspondent specializing in African affairs. And I traveled a lot to Africa and to some war-torn places as well. And at some point, I just decided that I was starting a family, and I just decided that this kind of lifestyle was not something I could continue doing. And that's why I decided to switch to science journalism. But that's been already well over a decade now. So, and as you can probably hear, I have an accent. In case you're wondering, it's a Polish accent. I was born in Poland, and I grew up in Poland. I studied law in Poland, and I started as a journalist in Poland. So I only started speaking English really in my 20s, and switched to writing in English when I was 28, I think. So yeah, that's the long story short.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, and you've had some great successes, and of course, I want to talk about Growing Young, this fantastic book, the subtitle, How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. And one of our other previous guests on the Writer Files, Dan Buettner, had some very nice things to say about it. Of course, he's the author of, The Blue Zones. He said, a lifestyle book that transcends diet and exercise as solutions for living longer. And of course, if you've read The Blue Zones, you know, kind of the extensive research that went into those interesting findings about those kind of seven different areas of the world where centenarians kind of are most prevalent, right? But let's talk about your work. And you put a lot of work, a lot of research, and dozens of interviews out in the field, all different types of experts and scientists. And so talk a little bit about how Growing Young came together. And I want to get into some of these fascinating findings, and I'm sure a lot of writers are going to be interested in this one, because there's just some really, really interesting research here.
So basically what I do generally as a science writer, I translate science academic papers into common language. So in my daily job as a science journalist, I write mostly for Scientific American, for the Washington Post, New Scientist, The Discover, and it basically entails reading hundreds and hundreds of research papers in fields like molecular biochemistry, neurology, anthropology, anything possible basically connected to biology in any way. And then, of course, talking to the authors of those studies and trying to understand what they really meant and how to translate it the best, the easiest, and in the most fun way for the readers to really understand what the science is saying. So this is what my job entails. And I was always interested in nutrition also for personal reasons. I'm trying to live quite healthy and eat healthy and exercise and so on. And as I was reading those hundreds and hundreds of research papers, and I started coming across more and more ones that were showing me a very different perspective, that maybe diet and exercise are not the only things that matter, and maybe even that they matter less than other things to our longevity and health, less than things such as friendship or kindness or committed romantic relationship, for example. So I just started reading more and more and investigating this area of research. And so what I did discover completely shattered my beliefs, because it did show me that indeed diet and exercise are not as important as we tend to think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So in digging into the book and the research, it would seem that we're, yeah, as you put it, we're kind of fixating on the wrong things about health. And although some of those things are important, There are findings that are far more interesting and important regarding kind of the mind-body connection, and I'm fascinated by a lot of that, those findings. Especially, you know, as you kind of explain, it's not a kind of a new agey woo-woo thing, right? This mind-body connection is a pretty well established. And now, as we dig more into, as you put it, kind of neurology and neurobiology, neuroscience, it's far more obvious that these things are pretty critical, especially right now.
You know, when you think about it, we evolved as social apes. So it does make perfect sense that our bodies are made to be with others. And when we are outside of our tribe, for whatever reason, in the past it meant being basically ostracized out of your tribe and made to wander alone on the savannah. These days it can mean socially distancing on your own in your apartment. But when we are isolated, this is not a normal state for a social ape whom we are. So our all this kind of stress systems in our body activate in a way that is detrimental to our health in modern times.
Right, right. So we're experiencing right now kind of a mental health crisis here in the U.S. And I'm sure that this is something that's happening all over the world. Although I think, you know, we're far more susceptible to some kind of a mental health crisis, given all the other crises that we're facing. But, you know, I mean, you read daily about kind of, as we talk about very often on the show, kind of the concentric circles of crises that are happening around the globe, specifically, and I'm not necessarily referring to political stuff, but that's happening everywhere. Of course, we're dealing with kind of climate crisis and social stuff. And I mean, how could one not be experiencing a little bit more stress than normal, right?
I mean, 2020 is definitely a stressful year. And the fact that we cannot rely on things that are best for us to counteract when we are stressed, so exactly other people, even physical contact. You know, research shows that things like hugs, for example, or just simple touch can really elevate stress, and we are not allowed to do that these days. You know, we're not allowed to hug our friends, and this definitely makes things much, much worse, because, you know, there are just so many things that happen when we experience just holding hands, for example, or just hugging someone we like. These are things that are tremendously important for us, just like, you know, other apes, chimps, for example, they groom each other, and this causes the release of endorphins. The same thing happens to us, and we need those hormones.
Yeah, yeah. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join. to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on.
Well, I think that the findings here kind of speak for themselves, and obviously this is a great time to be exploring these ideas, I think. You know, the idea that loneliness is bad for your health, and you know, I want to talk a little bit more about that, but you know, I think you ask a lot of great questions, and I think, of course, we'll point at the website for the book, which is growingyoungthebook.com. I'll drop the link in the show notes, and there's also some resources there, but I think, yeah, finding the book right now is pretty, pretty prescient, because obviously you've been working on this research for quite a while, and pre-pandemic, talk a little bit about some of the things that surprised you most, and then let's talk about kind of now that we're firmly entrenched in the new normal, like how we can apply some of these things, because this is really, really important stuff, I think.
So what really surprised me was the degree to which our social lives matter for our health. I had some inkling that these things may be important. You know, we know about stress. We know about, maybe some of us know a little bit about loneliness being bad for health. But, you know, the extent to which those things matter. So, for example, having a committed romantic relationship can lower your risk of premature death by about 49%, which is absolutely astounding, as considering that a healthy diet or exercise can lower it by 20 or 30%. So, you know, the numbers are really, really incredible here. And this was what really surprised me, how much it matters, those things, much, much more than I ever imagined.
As I said, you know, the findings, as you mentioned, that number one, that committed romantic relationship, pretty big, I think. And especially, you know, as we're trying to figure out ways to safely reintegrate our social lives, what does it mean? I mean, what are we looking at for the future? How, because, you know, you've talked about a little bit about how social distancing is actually probably bad for your heart, right?
It is. You know, people who are socially isolated, they are even 3 times more likely to die prematurely. This is really scary. And, you know, the social isolation makes you even more prone to viruses, ironically. So there was this one amazing experiment when researchers invited volunteers into their lab, and they basically put cold viruses in their noses. And those people who, before that experiment, they reported being most lonely, were actually much more likely to fall sick with the virus than those who didn't feel alone, who had friends and felt included. I know. So of course we have to be socially distancing these days, because the epidemic is real, and it's very important not to spread the virus. But on the other hand, feeling isolated and feeling lonely is acting against us, against our immune system. So we really have to find other ways to still feel connected and find meaning in all of this.
Gosh, yeah. Let's talk some about the pandemic, how we can continue to stay healthy, boost our immune systems at the same time as kind of cure this this loneliness. Because, you know, it's like, it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? People want to get back out there. They're itching to get into a social situation. But then, of course, exposing yourself to the novel coronavirus, which none of us have really experienced before, could put you in grave danger. So it's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are some ways. So definitely put more effort. If you live with other people already, you know, put more effort into really cherishing these relationships. if you have a spouse or children at home, hug them more often, look them deeply into their eyes, you know, don't spend all your time on your phone, like really, really cherish these relationships. And as for connecting with people outside, for example, it's much more important to call than to text. So even when you text people, you get much less oxytocin release than when you actually hear their voice. So there are some things that do matter and make a difference. But of course, you know, it is very, very challenging these days to find that that connection. But even just thinking about other people, you know, just how you can maybe help some of your neighbors, this kind of kindness can also help you and them as well. Of course, you know, you can leave a home-cooked meal at your elderly neighbor's doorstep, for instance, without ever coming into contact, but it still is a kind act and something that really makes you connected and promotes the community spirit.
Yeah, I love that idea. And I think one of your other ideas was, for exercise, instead of, you know, just working out in your home gym by yourself, go mow your elderly neighbor's lawn, which I thought was a really good idea.
Sorry. And it's also very coronavirus safe. You know, you don't have to ever see them, and you can still have the exercise, be kind, you know, feel, make the your neighborhood a little bit better place, and everybody benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, some of these findings are pretty, pretty astounding. And of course, living and being, you know, free of disease well into your old age is really important. It's something that we should start thinking about now, right? And there was something you mentioned about kind of beginning to establish that mind-body awareness earlier. You know, talk a little bit about that, maybe kind of what you found out about meditation or, you know, some of those interesting findings.
Yeah, so we often, you know, don't think about aging until we are approaching retirement. I myself am still far from retirement, and yet we should be thinking about aging early on, because we start aging from the day we are born. Actually, even before we are born, we are already aging. Our telomeres, so those protective caps at the end of our chromosome that are one of the biomarkers of aging, actually shorten the fastest in our first 4 years of life. So really, aging is not just for people who are in their 60s, 70s, or 80s. We should really be thinking about it early. And you can see biological differences when you try to measure how aged biologically people are already when you're in your 30s and 40s. And that can be a decade difference between one person and another. So it really matters to start early and not last moment. Yeah, and there are lots of things, you know, of course, things like meditation or yoga or just simple mindfulness really, really matter as well. And they can prolong your telomeres. So again, those protective caps at the ends of your chromosomes. And studies show that people who meditate a lot, they even blink slower and breathe differently, which actually are all measures of good health, which is absolutely fascinating to me that, you know, now whenever I see someone who meditates a lot, I cannot stop myself from checking if they blink differently. But there are some very real changes also on the level of the brain activation, you know, when the scientists scan brains of people who meditate a lot, they can actually see differences on the level of their brains.
That's pretty interesting. And of course, you know, even a small amount of meditation daily can really, really lower those stress levels. And, you know, I think when I think about, you know, you going just circling back to the retirement issue, you know, here I hear, you know, people in my age group talking about saving for retirement and prepare, you know, and kind of like putting all this time and energy into retirement. And the way I think about it is that I can't really imagine like picking a date to just, you know, what, sit on a lounge, you know, a bark lounger on a on a cruise ship until I die. And that sounds terrible. But let's talk about a little bit about like why, how retirement could actually be worse for your health and shorten that longevity scale.
It actually can. I mean, it really depends how you approach your retirement, but definitely if your retirement goal is to do absolutely nothing and spend the rest of your days on your couch watching Netflix, then it is a very bad idea because there is quite a lot of research showing that it does damage health, and people who do that, they live shorter and struggle with lots of health problems as a result. Because what we need basically is some kind of purpose in life, some kind of goal to strive, something to, a reason to wake up in the morning. And if you lose that, because for many people work is that thing, if they lose that and they don't have anything else to replace it with, then they really struggle. But of course you can, you don't have to work to have it. You can volunteer, you can be engaged in your community, you can have some other reasons to wake up in the morning, but usually Netflix is not that.
Well, you know, I've had quite a few productivity experts on the show, and the new, you know, it seems kind of like the new understanding of this unfortunate kind of cult of busyness that we're firmly entrenched in presently is getting a lot of backlash, you know, and I think we're examining a lot of the effects of our kind of always on workaholic, constantly multitasking culture. Is getting, you know, kind of looked at under a microscope right now, especially as everyone has, begun to do more work from home and telecommuting and so on and so forth. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about how that could actually improve, you know, our overall health in the future. And you know, I mean, you've mentioned kind of how smartphones can you know, I mean, again, this cult of busyness is kind of, is obviously not good for our health. So this reexamination is pretty critical right now, isn't it?
Certainly it is. You know, there is so much data showing that too much concentration on our smartphones is definitely damaging our health. And the reason for that is that it tends to damage our relationships. There is even a word for that. It's called fubbing. And if you haven't heard that, fubbing comes from phone and snubbing. And basically it means, you know, you've seen those people. They are sitting in a restaurant around a table, a whole family, and everybody, instead of talking, they are all looking at their phones. So they are fubbing each other and so ignoring to instead look at their phones. And it just basically damages relationships. So it's enough to just put your phone on the table, not even look at it, just have the phone there. And automatically the person with whom you are will judge the quality of the conversation as much worse just because the phone is there. So it really does impact the way we perceive our relationships, and the quality of our relationships does matter for our health. Once again, because we are those social apes who have all this hormonal and systems and all these nerves and make those relationships so much important to how we function.
Well, there's so many important messages in Growing Young. I will point at the website again, growingyoungthebook.com. I'll drop the link there to your homepage as well, zaroska.com. And at growingyoungthebook.com, there are resources that you can tap into for each chapter of the book, which I thought were very helpful, and lots of great stuff there. But maybe before we wrap up with your kind of advice to your fellow scribes on how to just keep going, what are you working on now? Are you kind of focused on promoting the book, or do you have some other projects in the hopper right now?
I mean, I'm supposed to be finishing the proposal for my third book, but I'm so busy right now with the book promotion for Growing Young that I do not have time to finish, but I'm expecting to start working on it again within 2 or 3 weeks. Certainly my agent is expecting that, so no. I should get to it. Also, things were quite crazy here because with schools being closed, I had to work full time and homeschool full time, which was extremely challenging to say the least. But I guess we are all struggling for the weird coronavirus times, so it's taking a toll on the work as well.
Yeah. Well, growing young, how friendship, optimism, and kindness can help you live to 100 is a smart, research-driven case for why optimism, kindness, and strong social networks will help us live longer. And talk a little bit about how we can keep going, how writers can just keep the faith in this very strange time and keep the ink flowing.
I mean, I think for us writers, in a way, we have it easier, I'd say, also to live longer, because I do believe that in our work, it may be easier for us to find meaning. And meaning in life is one of the most important things you can have for good health and longevity. This is something the Japanese called ikigai. So this is this famous reason to live, and we can find it, you know, we can, in the things we write about, or knowing that we are spreading ideas that are worth spreading. So I think that we are lucky here, that things can be better for us.
Yeah. Well, I do like how you open your acknowledgments mentioning that, being a writer is often socially isolating. But especially when you're doing research based and research driven stuff, it doesn't have to be, right? You're kind of creating these stories with these other experts that you've tapped.
I mean, I had definitely tons of fun sometimes writing this book, you know, also traveling for research. I was doing things like catching wild mice with researchers around Oxford, which was definitely extremely exciting. And I was doing experiments on myself with other researchers from University College London, and traveling in Japan and meeting centenarians there. So I really did have also quite a lot of nice social contact and just fun adventures, basically. But there was also a lot of sitting by myself in my office and reading one paper after another, after another, after another, a lot of them very difficult to read. So there is definitely this kind of part when you are just alone in your office, but it's important to remember to stop at some point and get your social life going, both for your mental health and for your physical health.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up. I'm looking at a picture of those mice now. They're very cute. of course, that's on the website, and the resources for the book, I'll drop that in the show notes. And thanks again for taking the time. This is a great reminder, I think, for everybody. But of course, these are things that we definitely should be thinking about. And I think on one side note, I was just going to ask you about introverts and kind of that social piece.
So, I mean, it's in terms of friendship and introverts and extroverts, the most important thing is that you feel that you have good social connections and that there are people on whom you can rely. And it can be just one best friend who you know is always there for you. Or if you're an extrovert, you may need 7 best friends. There is no better or worse number here, as long as you feel that your needs are made. And if, for example, you fall sick, there will be someone for you. This is all you need, this kind of feeling of inclusion, and also that there are people for whom you can be there, so that you are needed as well. And as long as those things happen for you, then you will be fine.
I love it. Well, thank you again for taking the time. Stay safe out there, and hopefully you live to 117.
Not 18.
Very good. Have a wonderful evening, and thank you again for doing this interview.
Thank you so much for having me, Kelton.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question
and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.